Get ready to whiten those knuckles and hold fast as we talk the most dangerous, daring, and epic sea stories ever told.
Whether facing ruthless men who prey on other mariners or storms that turn calm seas into graveyards, those who go down to the sea and cast off lines enter the most challenging and dangerous environment on Earth.
Only here will you hear their stories and the lessons gained through their experience. I'm your host, Phil.
And I'm Bill.
And we welcome you aboard the Had to Go Out podcast. Before we dive into this episode, we need to provide a disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the individuals involved and are not to be construed as official or reflecting the views of any government agency or military service. This podcast is an independent effort with no government association.
When the most is expected, the brave men and women of the U.S. Coast Guard are always ready. The National Coast Guard Museum will engage, educate, and inspire visitors by honoring the courage and skill of our nation's unsung armed service. The museum will explore the Coast Guard's rich history and current impact through interactive exhibits, STEM-based learning experiences, and leadership development programming. Find out how you can join the effort. Become a plank owner today. Visit CoastGuardMuseum.org/out. That's CoastGuardMuseum.org/OUT.
Welcome to another episode of the Had to Go Out podcast. Thanks everyone that's joining us today. Thank you guys for tuning into all of our past episodes, for subscribing to whatever social media and podcast platform you use, and for everyone that's subscribed to our YouTube channel, thank you. Tell your friends to do it so that we can live stream there and we end the headaches.
Yeah, for everybody who's brand new, first time listening, thanks for finding us. We're excited that you found us. I think you're going to be glad you did after you listen to this. After you do listen to this episode and you love what you hear, please go subscribe to us on any one of the podcast platforms you can find, or follow us on all the social media platforms. Shoot us a message if there's something you want to talk to us about. Maybe you've got a dangerous, daring, or epic sea story or stories that we'd like to tell. Anything like that, and I think we got a great episode for you today.
For sure, we got a great one. And Bill didn't say it, but if you do look us up, it's at They Had to Go Out, or you can go to theyhadtogoout.com.
I'll get better at this, I promise.
I know he's trying. Hey, with that, I think we've got an awesome one for you. This one, I saw her name on a ad for the Women's Leadership Symposium, the Coast Guard Women's Leadership Symposium. Gave a speech in front of a several hundred member audience, got a standing ovation at the end. So I expect everyone at the end of this episode to stand up in their cars and feel free to clap.
Don't stand up in your car.
Yeah, you just park on the side, park in the median, whatever, and feel free to clap.
Pull over.
And then clap. So hey, who we got on the line? Mrs. Sarah Faulkner, born and raised in Los Angeles, California. Went to boot camp back in 1996 with recruit company India 148. She went from there. First operational assignment was Motor Lifeboat Station Yaquina Bay, and then MLB Station Depot Bay, the hole in the wall gang. Obviously didn't have strong boatswain leadership there, and ended up going to Air Station Barbers Point with part of the airman program. Went to A school from there. We think swimmer number 560. We'll look it up by the end, somewhere in there. Graduated A school, went to Air Station Los Angeles out of there, going back home. From there to Air Station Mobile. And she's got a pretty cool story about how Mobile, even though it sounds like a horrible payback tour, actually wound up being a pretty good one. From there to the recruiting office in San Diego, telling lies. And then to the Air Station Clearwater, finished out at recruiting office in Hollywood, Florida, and retired after 20 years of honorable service. And with that, we've got Miss Sarah Faulkner on the line, and I'm going to ask Bill to ask the question.
I will ask the question.
Hello.
Hi, Sarah. So what is your most dangerous, daring, or epic sea story or stories?
Oh, goodness gracious. Well, I mean, there's a lot. Because, I'm an AST, right?
We've got time. It's an open format.
Oh, man, did you hear that? Yeah. Definitely an AST.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. they're all kind of a big deal.
Yep, they're all a big deal. You probably have great hair, too, right?
What's that?
You have great hair, too, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Bosemates, really, we're all bald.
Yeah.
You guys all have phenomenal hair.
Well, you know, obviously Katrina, the Super Bowl of SAR, was insane. And then there's another case out of Clearwater on deployment in Bahamas where I almost died. So those are probably my two big ones.
Okay, so I know those are going to be big.
Yeah,
I want to
yeah.
hear. We got to hear one story before those, though. What
yeah,
was your
okay.
first case at the lifeboat station?
Okay, first.
Or like the best case. It could be either
yeah.
one.
Yeah. Oh man. Okay. I got a cool one for you guys. So, I'm qualified, all that stuff, and I'm on first boat on the 44, and I'm driving because the coxswain is actually like putting in the, you know, the position in the old school.
Yeah, the or, route thing, yeah. all right. the things the pilots do in the air.
Right.
Yeah.
yeah. So I'm driving, and as soon as we get out, you know, past the jetties, he's like, okay, you know, bring it up, and I'm like, okay. And he's like, just watch out for pots. So I was like, okay. So I'm driving. We're going, you know, a whopping 12 knots and looking out for pots.
Plenty
for
of time pots. To react.
Yeah. And it's actually flat ass calm, but it's, you know, it's like evening sunset time. It's really cool. And all of a sudden something goes boom. And I'm like, oh no, because these people are sinking. Like, it's a father and a daughter on their fishing boat, and they're sinking. So I'm like, oh shoot, you know, I just screwed this up really bad. So throw everything in neutral. We all turn around, and our wake is thrashing and red.
Ooh, oh. Nice.
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh no. And they're like, go, 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 go. So I just, like, throw it back, you know, full speed and keep going. But I'm just, like staring straight ahead, like, oh, no. Anyway, I thought I hit a whale. And I was super bummed out. But a sea lion washed up on the shore a couple days later, so.
Oh, man, close call. Well, it's, you know.
You didn't hit a pot.
If you hit a whale,
didn't.
It is the most nightmare thing ever when you hit a whale, because you have to fill out reports and forms and then go cut it up with a bunch of young Marine Mammal Center people. So I'm glad it was a sea lion.
Yeah.
I imagine a whale probably stops the boat, too.
Yeah, we probably would have ran up over it or something, right. Actually, if you think about it. But anyway, yeah, so it wasn't a whale, which, you know, and I mean, I still obviously felt horrible. And
right, still bummed out about a sea lion, yeah.
Yeah, but, yeah, and just, it was pretty gory. But anyway, so we're going. We get there, and it just gets crazier from there. We get there, the boat engineer goes over with the pump, and he's like, oh, it's sinking really, really bad. So they call out the RHI to come with another pump, and then they get out there, and by now it's like starting to turn into this crazy storm, and the whole fishing fleet is making a beeline for you know, port, back in Newport, and like there's all this crazy lightning and stuff. So the RHI gets out there, and it's, you know, the surfman, he's super cool, and this Hawaiian guy named Jake Albino. Hey, Jake, you have to listen to this. anyway, so they put the pump on there, and they're like, oh, no, we need another pump. So the coxswain and on my boat and Jake are like, Sarah, jump off. So I'm on the RHI with just Jake, and we are, like, launching into the air, like, so hard and so high up in the air now, because it's like rough and there's lightning everywhere, and I'm like brand new crewman, and I'm just like, this is so cool, like, you know, like, yay, search and rescue, you know what I mean? I'm so stoked about the whole thing. Anyway, so we get another pump and another crewman, And they're trying, and now by now it's dark, and they're trying to put another pump alongside this boat, and the girl that comes with us on the you know, other, on the way back, which, when they're up trying to put the pump on this boat, the boat kind of...
Like solo, she's trying to put the P6 up on
this
boat?
No, with the other people that are still on the boat. But she's, like, trying to, like, reach it over, because, you know, obviously the RHI is way lower than the fishing boat. Well, the fishing boat and the RHI kind of smash together, and she breaks her nose.
Oh, man.
And, like, spurting blood. So, anyway, now that they've got tons and tons of, you know, pumps on board, we take off again and, you know, take her to the hospital. And then I take her to the hospital, and she's still in her dry suit. And,
oh, man, I would have totally, like, we're pulling in first.
Actually, we took her dry suit off, but we had to, like, stretch the neck seal, like, super far, and she was just like, and, like, you know, got her head out from underneath it.
Oh, anyway, yeah, broken nose, dry suit seal? Yeah, that sounds miserable.
So I take her to the hospital, and the whole staff, like, runs up to her because they think she's been, like, hung or something.
Right, they think that you hit her with the boat, right?
Yeah, right? No, like, the blood on the neck seal rings.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, anyway, that was
a... Oh, that's crazy.
Case.
I never even thought about that. Yeah, okay. Like, you have that line in.
Yeah, they were like, oh, my God. And they, like, rushed us. Like, what? Like, they thought she was hung or something because she had, like, bloody neck seal rings on her. Yeah, it was... Anyway, so that was a crazy case.
That is a crazy case. Yeah, that was a good one.
Did they end up getting ahead of the flooding? Like, was the boat okay?
Yeah. After they got 3 pumps on board.
I mean, I was worried about, like, the sea lion and then the boat and then the shipmate. They got her nose broke. Yeah, that was good. That was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was a good one.
So that was your intro to SAR, huh?
Yeah. And like, launching, like, just me and Jake with no engineer on the RHI.
That's
just like, like, lightning everywhere.
It's all fun and games, so you slam down in the bottom of the trough, and then it's just painful. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
What, okay, so let's see. First case as a swimmer.
First case as a swimmer wasn't, that exciting. It was, a medevac off a big container ship in the sky. They said it was, like, an injury, something, you know, aboard the ship. But later we found out, like, he had gotten stabbed by, one of the other shipmates.
I mean, it's an injury, but, and it happened on the ship.
Yeah, it is an injury, true. But they were not exactly, you know, forthcoming with how it happened. But he was already packaged up when I got him. But
they must have not hated him too much, because at least he got packaged up and they called for help.
Yeah, or somebody, you know, broke it up or whatever. But that was a little crazy, getting lowered down to the boat, because it wasn't full of containers, so there was, like, big empty holes, and trying to walk, like, these big, like, iron, like, planks, you know, and stuff. Anyway, that was like the only scary part about it.
Well, I never thought of this, sir. So, number one, like you saying, it's probably not that exciting. I would say, like, 99% of the population would be like, oh, I'm going to get lowered down onto this container ship. No big deal. You know,
that's what I was thinking. Like,
that's a pretty big deal.
AST's, like, your what's exciting is so skewed for your rate.
Right.
I'm sitting here like, so wait, you got lowered down on a cable from a helicopter to a ship in the middle of the ocean. Yeah, no, you hit some buttons of excitement there.
Yeah. There's a little daring in there, I think.
Right.
A little danger.
Right.
How do you train for that? Like, do you ever get on any pre, you know, all of this, right? No, right? Yeah, you just know how the cable goes up and down and how you're supposed to be on it. Like, you never practice, like, container cruise ship lowerings.
None. Yeah. None of that. Nothing.
Yeah, I can see, I can imagine. And I like how you're like, well, I was just navigating some, you know, some containers and walk to the back.
Don't fall down, like, five, you know, stories or decks below, because, like, that's how deep this thing went. And I was like, whoa.
They must show you guys the same video.
Iron planks.
Yep.
Yeah. No, no training for that.
All right, before we get to the Super Bowl, Asar, let's talk about Polar Ops.
Okay, Polar Ops is cool.
Yeah, so you're in Air Station Mobile doing your payback tour because you've had cake awesome jobs up until
LA,
Mobile.
Hawaii.
So you're at this payback tour, and you're thinking that life's probably not going to be great, and then they tell you, hey, we're going to the top of the world, or maybe the bottom. I don't know.
Bottom of the world.
Yeah, the bottom of the world. How does that go? What happens? What do you do?
Well, it's actually kind of cool. So there's, you know, there's Alabama, or Mobile is aviation training center. So it sucks for, you know, swimmers and people on the 65s and the 60s, pilots, flight mechs, swimmers, kind of, because you're not right there. Like, I mean, you are right there, like New Orleans, which is like getting crazy SAR all the time, and Clearwater getting crazy SAR all the time. We're in Mobile, where there's tons of SAR, but we're a training center, so if you are flying, most likely you've got an student pilot who's learning, so you can't get diverted for search and rescue. So even though there was something probably happening in Mobile Bay, New Orleans would get it. And it was just, like, so frustrating.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
So frustrating. So anyway, but then there's the Polar Ops Division, which is like a little branch. So you're still a regular swimmer or flight mech or whatever, unless you're going to get ready to go on one of the, you know, the Polar Sea or the Polar Star. Well, back then, but no Polar Sea anymore. Anyway, you get ready. I had to do maintenance for two helicopters, 6 months worth of maintenance for two helicopters by myself, which was... And I was still a third class. It's normally a second class that goes down south. So that was really tough, and a couple months worth of work. And then you take off and you go on the we were on the Polar Star with our two helicopters. And then this is actually a rare year. They had a helicopter crew go down with the Polar Sea one, because there was this big iceberg that was going to block something, so they needed, you know, extra air support or something. This iceberg was the size of Rhode Island that broke off.
That's a big iceberg. I don't even know. That's like...
It's not really that big. Rhode Island's not that big, in fairness.
But
it's still pretty big. You know.
Iceberg-wise, it's pretty big. Land-wise, not so much. So anyway... You know, we fly across the country and get to Seattle, and we're there for a while, and, you know, packing all of our stuff. And the deck crew is all mad at us because, you know, they have to move all their rusty chains and buckle or carabiners and all this other
such
stuff.
Such an aviator.
What's that stuff called?
I don't know if you can cuss on this show or not.
PG-13 is what we try to keep it, but we just never know.
Yeah, so they called us something aviators the whole time.
Yep.
And I was like, we don't even call ourselves aviators. You know, we say Airedales or whatever, but anyway, we were not exactly welcome. So, and they were really jealous of me, like the girls were, and I was like, why? Because you think I'm gonna steal your boyfriend you're not supposed to have on board?
It's because you didn't have to stand watch.
That's what I was gonna say. It's probably because you didn't have to stand watch.
Well, no, we did not.
Oh, we know.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think everyone knows. The whole Coast Guard knows that.
Well, yes. So, and we were always first in line for the galley.
Oh, yeah.
You're making tons of friends right now.
Nobody liked you.
So we posted the ASVAB scores for aviation online.
Oh my God. This is typical. Typical. Yeah.
Yeah, just, you know, if you're going to be jealous, you know.
How many ASTs were there? Right. Was it you and the AMT and then that was
there
it, right?
No, there were a few AMTs, a few AETs, and we had like five pilots, and I was the only AST.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. I was the only girl enlisted on the air crew, too.
So what were your responsibilities, like, as you understood them for the polar ops?
I was just basically part of the... So when we get to Antarctica, you actually fly mostly single pilot. And so I was like a regular, not a flight mech because I can't hoist, but I would fly with one pilot and we would go to really remote. I mean, it's Antarctica, so anywhere we went. So we would just go to crazy, like we actually landed on an iceberg with these scientists who got their little, you know, wind recording equipment and, you know, whatever, GPS and stuff, and would stick it up at the top of this iceberg. And I'm just like, I can't believe we're on top of an iceberg, and this thing's, like, floating in the middle of the ocean. I didn't steer too far away from the helicopter, because I figured if the thing was going to fall in a crevasse, maybe I could, like, hold on to the blades.
Planning your escape the whole time.
You know, yeah, everyone's walking around, and I'm like, I don't know if they realize how incredibly dangerous this is. But I did.
I did.
So that was super cool, and we also would land at penguin rookeries and help them, like, make little corrals and kind of, you know, help them count the penguins. So it was awesome.
So you were a penguin herder.
Yeah, I was a penguin herder.
There's a new nickname for Airedales.
Whale counter. But mostly we were a taxi service for the National Science Foundation, and we would just take the scientists off to just no man's land and just wish them luck and, you know, pick them up in 10 days or however long they were going to be. It was pretty crazy.
So to prep for that, right? Like, what is, man, I'm just trying to think, like, I mean, you're in like the most hellacious part of the world probably down there, right? Like, completely unforgiving to mistakes.
Dangerous.
Yeah, right?
There's no help coming.
Yeah. And if you are, you were the help.
Right.
So what, like, they always talk about that cold water survival school or whatever. I mean, did you have to go through that? Like, what are the preps?
We actually have to go to an Air Force school up in Fairbanks, Alaska, called Arctic Survival School.
Oh, man, that just cool sounds like school. A good time.
I just cool gotta school. Chill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool school.
It is fun. It's fun, except a lot of the stuff we learned how to do was not applicable to Antarctica because there are no trees to make fire out of.
Good point, yeah.
There's no plants there at all.
That's why your fallback plan is like, I'm going to hang on to the propeller blade.
Yeah, right? And not fall in the crevasse of this iceberg that's crumbling. Yes, but we flew with a Arctic, like, survival kit, this big kit, in the helicopter that had, you know, stuff if we, you know, it was just, I mean, we're already flying in all of our, you know, the same stuff they're going to would be flying in Antarctica, or not Antarctica, I'm sorry, like up in Kodiak in the winter. Everything's insulated and stuff, but then we also had this kit that we flew with in case we, you know, had to land somewhere or were in the water. It was just extra gear for extreme cold weather and water.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, like, you know, every, like, the coolest leadership books out there are written about, like, Ernest Shackleton, right?
Right.
Who got stranded down there. And then you guys are flying, like, to even more remote locations than he ever made it to.
And, yeah.
Yeah, like, if it goes down, man, could you, yeah, what a, that's,
well,
welcome to the suck.
At least we know that the Coast Guard can come save us because we had two other helicopters.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, too, like, the, you know, what do they say? Or we were down to one, right? And there wasn't a rescue icebreaker that could go down there.
Right.
So, yeah, man, that's wild. That would have been fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
totally.
For sure.
Yeah, no, it was really, really awesome. It's really exciting, you know, to be underway for 2 months. And then you see that first little piece of slush in the water. And then you see, like, a little, you know, chunk of ice. And then you see a small iceberg, and then, you know, they get bigger and bigger, and then you'll start seeing bigger icebergs with, like, one or two penguins on it, and it just gets more and more exciting the closer you get. And once you're there, it's just amazing. It's just what you see, and the color of the water, and the killer whales, and just watching the penguins, you know, they're like little missiles when they shoot through the water, because they're not a fan of helicopters.
I would imagine.
They run on their feet until they're like, screw this isn't fast enough, and then they go on their bellies, and then they slide as fast as they can, and then they just shoot into the water.
Awesome.
It's really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm envious of you for getting that experience.
Well, she got to see it all because she didn't have to stand watch.
What? I was going to say, so for 2 months, what were you doing? Like CrossFit on the aft deck? Or what? Like, what did you guys do?
Well,
we
had to wash the helicopter every day.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you couldn't because it'd freeze.
Right.
Well, CrossFit wasn't invented yet. So, you know, just whatever.
Push-ups and sit and reach or what?
Steel Beach.
Right, Steel Beach. All right, let's talk about the Super Bowl of SAR.
Mm-hmm.
You're at Air Station Mobile still, right?
Yes.
I'm guessing returned from the Polar Ops or haven't even departed?
Yeah.
Yeah, returned.
Yeah,
okay.
I've been in like a year or two after.
Hating life because of all these break-in pilots, like, you know, not letting you respond to anything cool.
Yeah, and keeping it interesting, though, let
right.
me tell you.
And then you get the weather reports, like it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
So how does Air Station Mobile and its swimmers, how do you guys mobilize? What happens?
So we're watching it, and we know the Coast Guard, obviously everybody knows it's Coast Guard's response was on point. So we knew if it hits New Orleans, it's going to be really bad, really bad. So, but we didn't know where it was going. It was still just coming right down the middle, and we didn't know, is it going to jog left? Is it going to jog right? You know, is it going to come straight at us and hit basically Mobile?
Right.
But either way, we had to get all the helicopters out of harm's way. So I was actually part of a crew that evacuated with some of our helicopters to Jacksonville the day before. So we get there, it's a really long day, you know, meetings, and I mean we don't go to bed till I don't know, like after midnight in these hotels, and then we have to get up really early and watch, you know, the Weather Channel. And so we're watching this hurricane on the news, and Jacksonville, it's this beautiful sunny day, you would never know that there was this hurricane raging in the Gulf. And as it starts, you know, making landfall or is going on for a little bit, we get a phone call from one of our like operation officers, and they said, come back now, people are dying. So we actually rode the tail end of the hurricane back into Mobile. So that was actually really dangerous for us because the pilots were dodging lightning and tornadoes the whole time. And so it was like like a really rough, really bumpy ride. It's extremely hot because it's the end of August in the Gulf. And I actually threw up in my helmet.
Nice. So it was rough. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then we land.
What do you do? What do you do when that happens? Okay, we got to talk about this now. So, did you take the helmet off and then just puke it and then put it back on?
No, it was not my flight helmet. Okay. It was like my rescue helmet.
Your rescue helmet. Okay. So it was going to get wet later anyway, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you.
Rinse it out. You know, no big deal.
We've got a lot more of this episode to go, and we'll get right back to it after this short ad from our sponsor. We're going to give you a key number about the future National Coast Guard Museum, and that number is 5.
There are 5 themed storylines: lifesavers around the globe, enforcers on the seas, defenders of our nation, champions of commerce, and protectors of the environment.
The exhibits and galleries in those storylines will be showcased in a 5-story museum.
And here's our favorite 5. For as little as $5 a month, you can be a plank owner and support construction of the National Coast Guard Museum.
For details on how you can get involved, go to coastguardmuseum.org/out. That's coastguardmuseum.org/OUT.
So, yeah, that was and also, if you guys ever had a chance to fly in the 65 where the swimmer sits, it's infamous for not being very comfortable, where the pilots can feel everything like they're on rails. We feel all the swing and, you know, all the kind of like the G forces and stuff like that a lot more, or the up and the down, where they're like more like connected. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Plus they can see where I'm just in the back, like in the tail. So I can't see everything that's gonna happen or about to happen. It's just like, we just dropped, you know, a bunch of feet. Like, they might be able to, you know, be more prepared for it, where I'm just like at the mercy of whatever's happening, you know?
Right.
And it's like all a surprise. So anyway, we land, and it was crazy because our air station in Mobile got messed up too. So there's no power. There's like SKs on the mules fueling helicopters by mule headlight. It was actually really cool how everybody that had stayed behind to kind of, you know, just keep, you know, like the skeleton crew that stayed on board all stepped up, because it was just such a immediate response that needed to happen. So it was so cool to see like SKs who didn't know really what they were doing, but just totally stepping up, which is what the Coast Guard is like. That's what we're known for. So it was really cool to see that. And as soon as I get off the helicopter, and we shut down, and there's a news crew in my face with the bright light and the camera, and they're. They want to interview me, and I can't even hear them because I've got, you know, I've got earplugs plus the, you know, the helmet on. They're asking me something, and all I'm worried about is, do I have barf on my face still?
I was gonna say, do you have your rescue helmet with the puke in it, like in your hand at the same time?
No, actually, we also had airmen there who were amazing. So I wrapped it up in a Taco Bell bag.
Oh.
And they're like, oh. And they were like,
dude, what a smell. Huh? Taco Bell and like, vomit.
Yeah. And they were like, here, do you want us? They were amazing. They got achievement medals for what their work.
Yeah, just the way you told that story was awesome.
Yeah. But, no, they were super cool. And they, you know, we had to change the plane around really quickly because a crew was like ready to get on. So they grabbed my stuff, and I was like, no, 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 you don't have to. And they're like, no, no, it's cool. It's Taco Bell to go.
Cool.
So it started out as Taco Bell, and it ended up back in the Taco Bell bag.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Totally. Just the whole
thing. It had nothing to do with the tornadoes they were dodging and stuff. It's because you're eating Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Not a sponsor.
There goes the sponsor.
Yeah, no, it has nothing to do with that. Yeah, it was just Taco Bell. But anyway, so the reporter asked me, you know, what's your biggest fear about this? And, you know, how you have to watch what you say. In my head, my answer was that we're not going to get them all. And, I mean, I was right. You know, we didn't. I don't remember what my answer was, but That's what I was afraid of. And then, anyway, so a new crew takes off. We're way bagged out by then. So I drove home, which was also really weird. It's nighttime. There's trees and all the damage. And I didn't sleep that night. I just had the radio on, and I was just listening and just imagining. Those people. I couldn't sleep. And well, luckily, I got a phone call. I was supposed to be back, like, later that afternoon. But they called me, and they're like, Sarah, you need to come in right now. It was like 6 a.m. and I was like, good, because I'm wide awake and I can't sleep because I just want to be out there. And so I go out there on a 65 in Mississippi, and it was crazy. We had 65s and 60s flying everywhere. You could just look any direction and there's 65s and 60s because when I went to Jacksonville, we already had helicopters from Cape Cod ready, that came back with us. So that's how prepared we were. So we're in Mississippi, and, it's like forest and stuff. The trees are filled with clothes and stuff because there was a 35-foot storm surge that went through. So you'd see a hooded sweatshirt in the trees and think, oh, was that somebody? And then no. And then all the boats from Biloxi are like washed way inland, and people are getting on these boats and talking on them, and they don't know how to talk on radios. So everybody is stepping and walking all over each other. And so it was really hard for us to find people because of all the clothes in the trees that look like people, just all the stuff that washed out of people's houses. And then there's white and orange helicopters everywhere. And they're like, oh, I'm in the white boat and it's the orange helicopter. And it's like, to us, that doesn't narrow it down at all. So it was really hard to find the people in the trees and the forest and stuff. But we also saw where tornadoes had come through and just blown everything over, like the forest looked like matchsticks, or you'd see the houses right on the shore where there was nothing there anymore except for steps leading to a foundation, and these were like big mansions and stuff. We saw looting from the air also. But anyway, so we finally hear this faint call from like an older woman saying Coast Guard and Mayday, and it took us forever to get her location. And they're on this big yacht in some neighborhood, and I actually get lowered down to the ground, and it's dry in Mississippi now, like there's no water, but there's like wine bottles that aren't even broken in the street, and just all this other stuff. And I remember, and I'm in my wetsuit booties, and I'm thinking, okay, note to self, change to leather boots,
right?
Because of all the crap everywhere. So anyway, I get on this big like yacht, and there's these three women and it was so hard not to just like burst into tears when I saw their mom. She was like 80, and they had kept her afloat in that 35-foot storm surge for hours, and they already had big infected wounds that were like the size of like teacup saucers that were like green infected just from that disgusting water. And they were so beat up in such a short amount of time that it was just, and the mother was also elderly and in diabetic shock and in so bad off, and it was just like why is this poor woman like in this situation, you know? Anyway, I didn't cry like I am now.
It's always harder when you look back on it.
Yeah,
exactly. But anyway, so we do that, get some people off the roof, you know, off of a couple roofs. They were stuck on roofs, and, you know, the roofs don't even have any shingles on them anymore. It's just like the wood siding. And I'm like, okay, well, cool. When I pick this old lady up and put her in the basket, how do I not fall off the roof and hit the ground, you know? Anyway, so it took all day, and we come back, and I've rescued like 6 people, and I'm feeling pretty proud of myself. I just rescued 6 people. That's a lot. I come back to the shop, and it's like this meeting ground of tons of swimmers. It's like a reunion. And they're like, hey, Sarah, what's up? How's it going? How many people did you get? And I'm like, I got 6. And they're like, oh, really? I'm like, why? How many did you get? And they're like, 45. And I'm like, ha, whatever, laughing at them. And they're like, no, you know. This guy got 42, and this guy got 56. And I'm like, what? And they're like, yeah, you need to go to New Orleans tomorrow. I was like, oh my gosh. So the next day was New Orleans, and by the time I got going, it was like 4 p.m., and we take off. I'm with a crew. I don't even know these people. I don't know any of them. But that's how well the Coast Guard is trained, that you can just hop on a helicopter. And now today I'm on a 60. So a different helicopter. And I meet, you know, the pilot, co-pilot, and I had 2 flight mechs. And then we were like, okay, well, nice to meet you. Okay, let's go. So we fly to New Orleans. And, oh, my gosh, it's a mess. It looks like a war zone. There's fires shooting out of the water. You know, there's just smoke. There's just craziness. I mean, everyone remembers what the, you know, the images of it are. Everything up being underwater. Even the amusement park, Jazzland, which was like a Six Flags amusement park. All the roller coasters are underwater. So it's just really weird images to see, you know. But we go, and as we're flying, and this is like, it's already getting bad now, where the, you know, the whole thing with the Superdome and people getting really violent, and some of the swimmers had been, you know, attacked or threatened because they're not, you know, rescuing the people who think they need to be rescued first. So as we're flying, the pilot says, hey, if we have to leave Sarah behind, one of you is going down and staying down there with her. And they were like, oh, yeah, yes, of course. And then the pilot was like, well, no offense, Sarah. And I was like, none taken. I was like, I don't want to be left down there by myself. I am not offended. Anyway, we go to this apartment complex. There's tons of people everywhere. It's like 3 stories. There's so many people on these balconies everywhere. So we're looking for the, you know, women and children. And we find a balcony with all like 4 women and a teenage boy and a baby. So that's our first one. And so I get lowered down, and I'm swinging, and I'm crashing into a tree and getting rubbed up against the railing and all this stuff. And the teenage boy was this huge kid. He was probably pretty young, but he was huge. And I would just have to stick out a body part, like a foot or an arm, and he just grabbed me. And then I got up to the railing, and the mom with the baby just handed me her baby. I didn't even like sit or straddle the railing. They just handed it to me, and I just had this baby in my bare arms, and I'm, you know, a couple stories up.
You're saying like just suspended from the cable, right, like right swinging, off. Yeah, you now have this baby in your hand. Yeah, man, what a feeling like, that would have been,
like,
huh?
and this is not a joke, but you remember when Michael Jackson stuck his baby over the railing at that building?
I do,
That's what this lady did. That's what she did. And I, so all of a sudden I have this baby in my arms, bare arms, no rescue device whatsoever. And, you know, I like push away. I don't know what I did. I don't remember. But I push away because when I go under the roof, they can't see me. They lose sight of me completely. But so I had to get out from underneath the roof so the flight mech could see me to bring me up. So I don't remember what I did, but somehow I you know, got enough of my body out and like looked up at him like, yes, go. And he pulls me up, and halfway up, you know, I'm looking at all these cars underwater, all this debris, like how high we are. And all of a sudden I just look at him and I kind of jerked and I like looked at him all of a sudden. And I honestly thought that he might be like hurt because I was holding onto him so tight, like I could have been crushing him. So I had to check myself to make sure that I wasn't crushing him. Like halfway up, I was like, "Oh no!" And I just looked at him like, "Oh my God! Like, are you hurting him?" You know?
Yeah.
And he was fine, and I wasn't, thank God. But he was like totally fine, which was really good. I guess I thought he was gonna be freaking out and squirming and stuff, like, what am I? You're not my mom, and I'm hanging from a helicopter. Anyway, but he didn't, thank God. I mean, I guess, you know, he probably knew, well, I got to get out of here. So I actually have pictures of that because since I had two flight mechs, one was actually hanging over the other and taking a video of that.
Hey, Sarah, let me ask you a question real quick, not to break up the story, mm-hmm. but that crew, you said you had never flown with them. Had they flown together, or was that like a total, like, hodgepodge, like, thrown together crew?
No, I think they were all from Clearwater.
Okay, so just got thrown. I was just curious.
Yeah, but that happened.
Right.
Throughout the whole time that you would have a hodgepodge crew from everywhere. So anyway, you know, they get him up there and I just go straight back down and get, you know, the mom and the sister and the grandma and the boy. And I mean, we did 48 rescues that day.
Yeah, well, like, I'm just thinking, like, mother's love and everything in that thing, you know, like, how crazy is that, bring that home? Like, mom is so, like, it really gives a lot of weight to that story, you know? Like,
yeah.
Because mom's so freaked out. She's willing to hand her baby off to someone suspended by a cable under a helicopter.
And he didn't even flinch about it.
Not even thought about it.
That's a better option than where you are right now, right? Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Get him out of here.
Unreal.
Yeah. So, and what's weird to think about that, you know, like in my head, he's still this little baby, but you know, he's like a teenager now.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Good thing she didn't try that now, right?
Yeah. So, you know, and actually I did a couple, I think I did like two more physical hoists, or they're called physical grips on little babies later. And, you know, I wasn't as freaked out, but that first one really freaked me out a bit. But it was just.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about, man, crazy. I'm thinking about,
I can't imagine,
like Sarah, like holding a baby, like I'm already kind of, you know, you're really gentle about it, right? And then, I've dealt with, like, I'd say toddlers maybe, but never, like, an infant, I don't think. Right. Not, like, that small.
Yeah.
Especially not under a helicopter, for sure. So, yeah I can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been wild. I don't know. I could totally understand that sentiment, too. Like, am I holding him too hard?
Right. Like, yeah. I want to hold him hard enough that I don't drop him, but I don't want to crush him at the same time.
Right.
It's like the eggshell. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Crazy. Yeah.
So, anyway, I could... Probably every swimmer that was there could write a book about their experiences. I could write a book about that night alone.
Right.
With all the crazy stuff that happened.
And how many, like, how long were you there for? How long were you guys deployed to support Katrina rescue efforts?
Well, So we actually would fly home.
That's right. You're out of Mobile. Well, that's right. Yeah. How long? Yes. How long did they continue? I guess. How many flights do you think you did, or how many? I'm sure you guys kept stats, obviously, right? I mean, you had to go back to the shop and compete with those others.
Yeah. Well, some of them were so hardcore, like they didn't leave New Orleans because they were just, you know, they were. I mean, yeah, some of them were kind of like a little overzealous about it. I mean, we did it for like a week. I mean, it was really only a few days that it was insane, and then it slowed down to more of like the kind of like where they're going door to door by boats and stuff. Mm-hmm. And we didn't really have a part in that, but we sort of transitioned over to like bringing in MSST teams and stuff like that for security and stuff like that.
Right.
Do you remember how many people you personally were involved in pulling out of there?
Yeah, like 80.
I expected a Randall quote right there. Senior Chief Randall. I don't remember. I only remember those I didn't save. I thought it was coming.
Yeah.
Well, we got
clapped,
it,
Sarah. Yeah. I clap at 80, but I would have totally clapped it down. Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
What awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, but it, I mean, it stunk though, because after like the second and third day, I stopped looking in the water because you're like, is that a chair or is that somebody face down with their arms out, you know? So I would look only above the waterline, like in the second story windows and above in the roof,
right,
or on the roofs. Because I just didn't want to see any more dead people.
Yeah, and I mean, at that point, anybody that's still there is just trying to reach higher ground.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you get to use an axe?
I didn't have to.
Darn. I was just curious. I was in headquarters the other day. There's an axe with like a Triton. Is that what you guys call it? Like the Triton, the little vest you guys wear?
Yeah, the one where we all signed.
Yeah, there's one. Yeah, like it's under glass with the axe. It's a pretty cool little display. Yeah, if anybody gets a chance to see it.
So your signature's on that too?
Uh-huh.
Solid. Oh, cool. Yeah,
that's
very
awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. I think, well, there might be two, because I think there's one at the Smithsonian too. I'm not sure.
Also cool.
There is.
Yeah.
Either way, you're famous.
Yeah.
For all the right reasons, too.
Right, yeah. Not infamous, famous.
Right. You're not Michael Jackson famous. You're the good kind of famous.
Cool.
That's the last Michael Jackson reference in the
entire
podcast.
We can't do it anymore. She brought it up.
I know, but that's the last one.
I brought it up.
I'm laying down the law on no more Michael Jackson references. So, Sarah, you told us you had a pretty good story from Clearwater, where mm-hmm. you said it got pretty dangerous, which probably covers the daring and epic, too. What are you... What about that one?
Okay, so this is actually funny because I had just gotten stationed at Clearwater and had to get re-qualified on the 60. Like, I don't even think the ink was dry on my post-flight letter and, you know, the new rescue swimmer letter for the new unit, and they're like, you're going on deployment. And we're like, all right, cool. So we go to, down in the Bahamas. It's part of the OPBAT, Operations
yep.
Bahamas, Turks and Caicos.
Yep.
So we're down at our Bahamas site, and we get called for a case off of the Eleutheras Islands. And it's pretty far off. We had to get gas, fly to an island, get gas, and then fly out again. And so it's this like 64-foot sailboat called the Arctur, and they've lost everything, like engines, sails, battery generator, whatever. They don't have anything. The only thing they have is a spot, which is the little like internet thing that sends like an email, GPS,
every
15 minutes or something.
Yeah.
So somehow they get that, I guess. I don't know if they're overdue or what, but maybe you can send a distress signal off of that thing. I'm not exactly sure. But it's weird. As a swimmer, we don't get all those details. You know, it's just like we do the rescuing part. So
yeah, I mean, you can't even see out the window, right? Until you're there, and it's like, all right, here we go.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so you don't get a backstory or whatever. The only thing I might do if a star alarm goes off is go, what do I wear?
Right.
Because I got to know what I wear, you know, and that's not just as a girl.
Right.
I need to know what outfit to wear.
Are the female dry suits better for swimmers than for boat female? Like, boat crew dry suits for females are terrible. Like, there's no, what are they? Like, you can unzip the dry suit, but you can't unzip, you can't unzip the underlayers.
Oh, no, I've almost wet my pants many times. I'm sure, flight.
Yeah. Okay, so it's not, that is unique.
At least
not
the
unique.
Suck is, the suck across shared the across the it's board. It's a shared suck, yeah.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no, they stink. And mine, like, mine's not a female, it's just a rescue swimmer, you know, dry suit, it's, you know.
Yeah, all one size fits all.
Unisex, yeah.
Okay.
So,
you know what's funny? You just random thought, right? Like, they just did that women's retention study. How have we not fixed that yet? Where, like, where women can go out of their dry suit. It's just, how has that not been fixed?
Oh, I was a swimmer for 10 years before they even got me wetsuits that were actually cut for somebody with, like, hips and, you know, thighs.
That's just crazy.
Seems like a low. Yeah. It seems like a low bar too. Like, we should be able to figure that
like,
out.
Yeah, like, here's quickly. My layup, right? I'm gonna put a zipper right. in the back of this thing. Done.
Yeah, and you know, it's was maddening for a lot of swimmers. Is you could go to a surf shop and get an O'Neill off the rack that fits great. You know.
Yeah.
Right.
That's. I mean, we'd shut down if you couldn't go. I mean, it would be over. I don't know. Right. I'm peeing in the suit. It's happening. Right. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah, no, it's I've done the like little pee-pee dance trying to get that thing off many times.
Oh yeah, yeah, the pee-pee dance with the dry suit or the wetsuit. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, wetsuit, you don't have that problem.
Yeah, you can just go. You're right. It depends on where you're standing. You know what I mean? You still gotta. Yeah. Yeah, you gotta have a little.
Well, if I have an opportunity to go in the water, then I don't have that problem.
Right. I got you. All right. So dude's on his spot. Whatever that
is. Yeah, he's on the spot. Yeah, we get the you know, location. We find them. There's a local, like, you know, mariner. Like, there's a big ship out there that's calling out the weather and the waves and all that stuff. So it's like 12-foot seas, 20-foot waves, 45-knot winds, and it's nighttime. And anyway, so we show up. And this boat looks like the Black Pearl. The sails are flapping. They're all ripped. And just, it looks like a ghost ship. It's completely dark. The sails are just flapping and ripped in the wind. It's just bobbing all crazy, just no rhyme or reason. And they're, like, talking to them on the boat and, well, first off, we're hovering over them for a while before they even know that we're there. And I guess finally they saw the lights and they come out all they had was a handheld. So they come out and the pilots are talking to them and they don't want to leave. And the pilot starts telling them, like, okay, well, that's your decision, but it's not a very good one because all you have is your spot. That's the only way we found you. There's no guarantee if you need help again, you don't have a radio to call for help besides this handheld, which you barely can hear us when we're right overhead of, you know, overhead. And, you know, you're screwed if you guys need us again. And if we can't find you. So as he tells them that, he said, oh, actually, we just started taking on water. Yeah, we'll take that ride. So
good call.
Yeah. So anyway, so I was already, I don't know if I was already getting dressed or not, but I think I was. But anyway, so I have to go, you know, swim to this boat that's moving so fast away from me. It's the hardest I've ever swam in my life. Actually, the only thing closest to it is A school. Because that's how hard they push you at school.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah. The only thing close was a school. And I'm actually, I was screaming in my snorkel. That's how hard I was swimming.
Wow.
To get to that boat, to catch it. Because it was just, it's like as fast as I could swim, it was just moving away from me. And, you know, when you're it for these people, you don't give up, you know? It's like you don't have a choice. Oh, this is really hard. I can't do it. No, like, you don't have a choice. You have to do it. That's your job. This is what you signed up for, and you gotta get there. So,
damn, Sarah, I'm freaking
ready.
I'm ready to swim.
Ready to go
let's
to
go.
School.
Where are we
I'm
going?
Go
where
to
are they at?
School
yeah,
right
let's
now.
Do this. I love it.
So I'm like getting smoked, getting to this boat. And anyway, I see this rope in the water, and I'm like, heck yeah, I'm going to grab this rope and, like, water ski, basically. So I'm swimming, and I'm going to reach for this rope so I can at least hang on and not have to swim alongside, because they're also on the wrong side. They're on the starboard side. They need to be on the port side, because the way the boat is going up and down in the air, it's coming down on the starboard side. And also just the position of the boat and the picture, the way the helicopters re-rescue people, they need to come off on the other side. So anyway, as I'm going for this rope, this big wave comes and basically picks the stern up of the boat and pushes me underneath the stern.
Ooh.
And, I mean, it's way up in the air, like way up in the air and coming down on me. And I was like, oh, I'm dead. Like, just matter-of-factly, I'm dead. And it came down on me and crushed me. And I stayed soft, if that makes sense, and let it kind of hit me, but I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, you didn't fight it. You just let it push you down.
I didn't fight it.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I let it push me way down, and then it pops way up high again, and another wave pushes me in even farther, and now I'm between the screw and the rudder. So I'm like, cool, I'm either going to get chopped in half by the rudder or, like, diced by the screw. So somehow, by the grace of God, I got in between the two of them. But I really did think this time, I hope, and this the flight mech's name is James Nelson, but I called him Jimmy. I said, I hope Jimmy can pick my body up with the basket.
Yeah, so this was serious.
Yeah.
I mean, you were feeling it.
That's not a place you want to be between the screw and the rudder.
No.
Ever.
No.
Yeah, when it's like 20 feet up in the air.
Right.
On a, yeah.
The flat calm day, I'm not going there.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I scratched like up on my belly, face up and scratched my way out from underneath it and still had to get over to the port side and still swim alongside that boat that's going really, really fast and then scream to them. Hey, like, you're on the wrong side. Like, come over here on this side. And, you know, one guy jumps off. I grab him, you know, swim. Well, actually, I didn't even have to swim away from the boat. It's just taking off. And then call, you know, for the basket. Put the guy in the basket. Swim away. Then they pick me up with just a strop.
That's where I wonder where that was going. I was like, man, did you have to swim to catch up it again? Yeah, that would have been wild.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you guys have ever done any kind of duck flights or whatever, but the strap is not comfortable, and it's, you know, for anyone who doesn't know what that is, it's basically like a big loop that you put under your arms and then hold your arms down to keep, and then it just picks you up out of the water. Well, that's not exactly the best thing for catching your breath.
Right, right? Yeah. When it's crushing your lungs.
Right.
Yeah, and you're holding yourself like, I'm using a lot of my strength to, you know, keep from slipping out of it. So they basically just pick me up. I sit in the door for a few minutes, you know, a few seconds while they maneuver closer to the boat again, and then lower me down, and I'm like heaving. I'm so gassed and so out of breath, and then boom, have to do it again, and then boom, have to do it again. And the third guy was the captain, and since we're running out of gas, we did a sad poo, which is the sling augmented double pickup, which is actually
a sad poo. Yeah, acronym. What an acronym. The sad
yeah.
poo.
Yeah, sad poo, man. So, and those are actually kind of cool because you go up together. So,
not only because of their name, but they're also functional.
I was gonna say, we've heard people describe them before, but I've never heard the acronym.
Yeah, I never heard sad poo.
Oh, really? We got sad poo, and then there's mad poo. That's for the military people.
Nice.
Military aviator double pickup.
What was the what's the button you don't want to hit in the helo? Wasn't what was that thing? Remember that?
Wait, no.
I can't remember who's
shear.
What's it called?
The shear button.
I don't know. That one sounds bad too.
Well, that be shearing the cable.
No, he had what was it? I can't remember. It was some crazy acronym. I'll get back to you later on it. I'll eventually remember.
Okay.
But I was like, dude, that thing doesn't even sound good.
There's a lot of buttons
you
don't
want to
hit.
Right? I bet.
Depending on what the situation is.
Shear? The swimmer would say that. I don't want to hear shear ever.
No, you don't. Well, you won't hear it. You'll just feel it.
Right?
Yeah.
But anyway, so I've got him, and I'm like kind of holding him by the back of his life jacket while they're, you know, unhooking the basket and putting the strap on in the helo. And as a wave would come, I would just kind of I had him by the back of his life jacket, but I would kind of pull him over to so he could see my face, like from the side, like looking over at him, like looking at him from I'm behind him, but I would kind of put my head around so he could see me, if that makes sense, and like look over at him.
Yeah.
And I would say, there's a big wave coming, and I would just like smile. You know, like, hey, no big deal, big wave.
Right.
You know? And, you know,
putting on the yeah, calm then, front.
Yeah. And then, you know, we'd get, you know, kind of washed around a little bit. And then, you know, hey, hang on, here's another one. and then, anyway, so hook them up in the strop, and we, you know, go up and we fly to NASA and drop them off, and everybody lived happily ever after.
Solid. And you didn't get cut by the prop or crushed by the rudder?
No, I just had, like, the Charlie horse from hell.
Yeah, hey, way better than small your price. Lifeless body being picked up by the flight mech.
Yeah.
Yes.
Much better.
We're going to count that as a win.
Right?
Great story, Sarah.
It's
Thank
definitely
you.
Definitely a win.
Thank you for all those today. That was a lot of fun. We really enjoyed it.
Yeah, Sarah, that was awesome. Cool. Thank you. Thank you for sharing those with us and with the audience. I know that now you are officially retired, living the life,
yes.
Working at an animal sanctuary with 400 animals on it. I know that you recently, you had a, we'll call it a horse mishap. Pretty serious one. We're glad to hear that you're recovering from that. I'm glad that you're able to be on the show. And
Thank you.
You know, this is at least the second time that I didn't hear you speak the first time, but I did hear the feedback from it. And then I've heard you here, and I know that you're making inroads to kind of go on some of the professional speaking circuit. So if anybody wants to book you or look you up, right, we'll tag you all over these episodes and all over our social media. And
great.
They can contact you at swimat1@gmail.com. And I'll spell that for everybody and phonetically.
Oh, we're going to do it phonetically?
Sierra Whiskey India Mike Echo Tango Tango Echo #1@gmail.com.
Yes.
That's pretty good,
that was,
right?
That was impressive.
I know. I'm
very
basically,
good.
That was impressive. You're
hey, Sarah, you're awesome. Thank you for your stories. And we'd love to have you back on sometime. And,
absolutely.
Hey, I know, stuff gets rough out there, and if you ever got a talk or anything, I think we found a heck of a network of a lot of people that have been in similar crappy situations where, you know, people were suffering and dying, and if you ever got to talk about it, just let us know.
Cool. Thank you.
Cool. Sarah, take it easy. Recover quickly, okay?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, Sarah.
Good.
Bye, Sarah.
All right. Bye. Thank you.
Before we end this, we want to give a plug for some people and organizations that we believe in.
The Coast Guard Foundation supports the brave men and women of the Coast Guard when they need it the most, providing everything from financial aid to families in crisis to scholarships and playground equipment. As a nonprofit 501c3 charity, they count on our donations to deliver this support. Visit CoastGuardFoundation.org. That's CoastGuardFoundation.org to read about their programs and donate what you can to support those who guard our nation's coast.
Another one to check out is the Always Ready Collective, which delivers art by and for some daring fighters of the sea. Head over to Etsy, Facebook, or Instagram and search Always Ready Collective to check out their Coast Guard and Maritime-focused tattoo flash, pinups, and propaganda. You won't be disappointed. Anyone who gets one of their designs inked on their body will get featured on their feed and can be sent a care package on the house. Find a design you like, some blank canvas, and get it done. Thanks for taking the time to listen.
If you like what this podcast is about and what we delivered, look us up at theyhadtogooout.com or your favorite podcast platform. And like, comment, subscribe, and share so we can keep the momentum up and do bigger things going forward.
Look for a new episode every Sunday. Until then, fair winds and following seas.